Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way to our conversation, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it is a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. More information at www.mecu.com. Or you can go to steinershow.org and click on their banner on our website. The first part of our program today, we are joined by Ralph Nader, of course, the world-famous consumer advocate, political activist, three-time presidential candidate, full-time public citizen. His latest book is Getting Steamed to Overcome Corporatism, Build It Together to Win. And Ralph Nader, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Mark.
So this is an interesting time for this book to come out. As we kind of approach tonight, when President Obama gives his State of the Union speech, and as you talk about the power of corporations controlling the life of America, what is it you think Americans should listen to critically tonight for, and what would you like to hear him say that he may or may not say?
Well, first of all, we'd like him to announce a major crackdown on corporate crime and ask the Congress to expand the puny budget that the Justice Department has. It's as if there is a massive street crime wave in New York City, and there are only 150 policemen in the city. That's the kind of paucity. And there's so much corporate crime going around. It's reported in the Wall Street Journal, Baltimore Sun, Washington Post. You know, it's reported all over constantly. Crimes ripping off Medicare, for example, crimes where drug companies promote drugs for unapproved uses that end up with people dying or getting sick. Crimes involving not cracking down on imports of contaminated food and contaminated ingredients and medicines from China, the kind of escape and avoidance of taxes. The second thing I'd like President Obama to do is to press forward with a major program to Congress to start taxing these giant multinational corporations who have figured out how to game the system, Mark, where they don't even pay any taxes, or they pay 2%. Or like General Electric, they don't pay any taxes year after year, and they get checks back from the Treasury. So screwed up is the tax code. They actually get away with zero tax for a lot of profit every year. GE is very profitable. But in a three-year period, very recently, they got $3 billion back from the Treasury. Verizon had 3 years of good profits and paid no federal income tax. All this you can get from citizensfortaxjustice.org in Washington, D.C. The third thing I'd like him to do is to urge these corporations to start paying out more dividends to shareholders so that consumer demand can go up and create jobs. And the fourth is to fulfill his thus far broken promise to the American people that he made in 2008 to raise the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage, to $9.50, which is what he promised in 2008 he would do by 2011. So it's now 2012. The federal minimum wage is now $7.25, which is $2.75 less than it was in 1968, adjusted for inflation. And worker productivity has doubled since 1968. So in that way, you can release hundreds of billions of dollars for consumer demand in a recession to create more jobs, more dividends by companies like Google and Apple and Cisco and Oracle and many others who pay little or nothing, sitting on hundreds of billions of dollars of cash.
The question is, I mean, one of the things in reading your book, all the examples you gave, you just alluded to one early on in what you just said about the pharmaceutical Eli Lilly, and what they had to pay out $1.4 billion for promoting a drug that didn't, in ways that it didn't really do for people who took it, the ATV story that you have, the millions of stories in this book. So the question, but nobody knows about these things. I mean, you're right, you know what I'm saying? This is, the press doesn't cover these kind of things.
Well, what's interesting, I wrote this book, Getting Steamed, based on mainstream media reports on corporate crimes and abuses. For example, a lot of these examples come right out of the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, Corporate Crime Reporter, Health Newsletter, Progressive Populist. I mean, these are established sources of documentation. And the whole idea of the book is to get people steamed. So the introduction says to the reader, try this experiment on yourself. Get ready for it. Can you read 200 of these outrages, which affect everything that you interact with, whether it's polluted water, contaminated air, defective products, more taxes you have to pay because the big guys don't pay their share, raising the price of health insurance due to about $250 billion of billing fraud and abuse in this country. $250 billion, that's with a B. That's well documented in the book. So read through these, and each one is about a page, and they're really engrossing. Read through these, and then when you reach the aftermath on page 183, ask yourself how you feel. What's your emotional intelligence like? Are you willing to join with a million other Americans in a major campaign, which is described on CSRL.org, to organize in every congressional district the kind of citizen pressure to get through an agenda for corporate reform, a couple of which I've just noted, bigger right. crackdown on corporate crime. And this is relatively easy. I mean, you know, this is less time than people spend watching the Super Bowl in a few days. And it's done in a way where if people want to wait until 999 other people contribute $100, raise or contribute $100, and 100 hours a year, they can do so. If they're not satisfied that that will be strong enough, they wait until 9,999 pledge, then the pledge is exercised, and so forth all the way up to a million. So all it is a pledge. It's not binding. It's a pledge so that enough people pledge at certain levels, 999 or 999 or 99,000. That's when the pledge has to be called in. And it's morally binding. It's not legally binding. And you can see it explained on CSRL.org. I actually signed some of these books at BWI Airport at Hudson's, and the autograph books are at that bookstore. Anybody who happens to be on their way at the BWI Airport.
Which is there this morning. But now, you know, when you write about, let's say, the Harper Financial Services Group and the Lincoln National Corporation that took $4.3 billion, if I remember right, in TARP money that they used not for the purpose they were using it for, but to buy bonds to enrich themselves.
That's right.
But you have these stories over these. So what can be done, though, is the question. I mean, so people get angry, they give a dollar, but it seems to me what's missing in America to confront this is any kind of unified effort, organization to confront what we face.
Yeah, and that's what this book helps to organize. And on page 185, you can see the nine ways to hold corporations to high behavioral standards and to make them accountable. And there's a tenth, which, of course, is to get corrupt money out of politics, to get private money out of politics, no corporate money, make it public finance campaigns. Public campaigns should be public finance. It's like public parks or public finance. Public schools are publicly financed. But what I want to try to show, because when you make a point about how powerful these corporations are and how they get their way with a majority of the members of Congress, there's a reciprocal that's not very helpful. The reciprocal is they are so powerful, nothing can be done about it because we, the people, are so powerless. That's a myth. People haven't even tried to organize on Congress in every congressional district. You get 2,000 people out of 650,000 each congressional district, Mark, organized in this way with four full-time staff in each district and people putting in 100 hours a year. I mean, you and connected with one another through 435 districts, you can't believe how fast a lot of these senators and representatives run for cover. Look what happened a few days ago when they were flooded by this email on this copyright thing with the Internet.
Right.
I mean, they were dropping off the legislation faster than you can count them in the Senate and the House. So even though you're right, folks, to say that these corporations are very, very powerful, that they put a lot of money in the campaigns of senators and representatives, that they get their appointments in high government positions. They don't have a single vote, these corporations. We're the ones who have the vote, but we haven't organized it because we grow up being told in 100 ways, you can't fight City Hall, you can't fight Exxon, Mobil, you know, just get along by going along. Once you drop that inhibition, then you will see the enormous civic power that can be organized in one district after another. Now, people often don't believe that, which is why this proposal starts with a pledge. Starts with a pledge. The money goes to a nonprofit. It starts with a pledge that doesn't get called unless either 999 people do it, or if you want to wait until 9,999 do it, or if you want to wait until 99,000 do it. It doesn't get called. And when it does get called, it's totally a moral obligation. It's not a legal obligation. Because I've learned over the years, Mark, that a lot of people want to get engaged on some issue or another, but they don't know whether it's worth their time, it's worth their effort, it's worth their money. And once they realize that there are a lot of other people who are pledging to do exactly the same thing, if you pledge, they pledge, and they reach a certain level of pledges, then people are more likely to enter the arena of change in this country, which is so long overdue.
We're talking to Ralph Nader. 410-319-8888 is our number. 410-319-8888. His latest book is Getting Steamed to Overcome Corporatism, Build It Together to Win. Getting Steamed to Overcome Corporatism. 410-319-8888. Let's take when you just mentioned the example of of Google and the other internet companies that really did fuel this campaign that blocked the SOPA that we covered the other day on this show, but again it was fueled by them and hundreds of thousands of people called the congressman from across America. But let's just take an example where that's not happening at the moment. Right now, Congress is debating whether or not whether or not the government should close the deal with the banks over the money they give money to $25 billion from the banks so they will not be sued by attorneys general. But Democratic attorneys general from all across the nation are saying, no, we don't want this deal because the banks are getting away with billions of dollars more. This only gives $20,000 a person to a few people. It's not going to help the mortgage crisis, but it's a way to ameliorate the process and look good. But those calls aren't flooding now because there's no organized effort to make those calls flood in. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
And this is a huge deal. This is huge. This means that if this deal goes through, then the banks that created this economic crisis cannot be investigated and not be brought to justice.
Yeah, for this robo-signing, this fake paper. Yeah, it's a sweetheart settlement with one addition. It blocks people from suing to recover what they've been stolen from. And now, it's a good point you make. I mean, Google and others generated this, but after all, people had to agree and send in their email of protest to the senator and representative. Let's take any other issue. There are always people who can generate it. The FL-CIO could generate millions and millions of emails to Congress to raise the minimum wage. They're not doing it. But maybe once they saw what Google did and other companies did a few days ago, maybe they say, hey, holy smokes, this works, you know? This is, you know, they just flood the Congress with this. It's a way of generating an instant referendum of people who care to vote by emailing their senator representative. So this is going to be interesting to see what happens in the coming months, whether this will be applied to other issues like the minimum wage.
Well, I guess I should have had you with me the other day, Ralph, when I interviewed Leo Girard. That would have been a great question.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Yeah.
President of Steelworkers.
United Steelworkers. But, you know, there's sort of a bureaucracy over there at the FL-CIO. They got like 13 million members, dues-paying members for their member unions. Hey, listen, you know, give any consumer group 1 or 2 million dues-paying members, you can see the effort. They got to wake up. The FL's got to wake up. They know about the Internet. They're fully computerized. They got a great website on executive compensation. They got to wake up and start generating worker email. And if they didn't believe it would work in the past, well, they have the copyright fracas as a way to encourage them in the last few days.
Let's open the phones at 410-319-8888. We're having another conversation we had over the years, many of them, with Ralph Nader. His latest book, Getting Steam to Overcome Corporatism, Building It Together to Win. 410-319-8888. And Leo, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mark Steiner.
Welcome, Leo.
And your guest, Ralph Nader. How you guys doing?
Well.
Listen, what do you think, and this is speculating right now, but I've never seen so many star-spangled cowards in my life in the United States. We talk a lot about community organizing and mobilization for justice, but it ain't happening to the degree that it ought to, particularly in, I'm going to focus on the gasoline industry. What about boycotting British Petroleum and Exxon Mobil, selective boycott here to rally folk? Is it doable, and is this question of price controls, does the Congress of the United States and or state governments, do they have the authority, the legal authority, to impose price controls on the gasoline industry? Which way do we go? Do we impose price controls? Do we demand that? Do we mobilize behind it? Or do we boycott that industry? Because we need to do something other than cry. I'm damn sick and tired of people crying and not standing up and fighting, because we're not fighting. What do you guys think?
Thank you,
Leo. Well, you know, you put your finger, Leo, on one of the hardest nuts to crack, which is the price of gasoline and heating oil. Because the oil companies and the New York Mercantile Exchange, those speculators, have got it so gamed and so rigged. So let's start with one of your points, price controls. That has to go through Congress. I don't think the executive branch has the authority. That's not going to happen in 100 years unless people, you know, change their ways of spending time on Congress. And the second thing is the key is a mercantile exchange. They're the ones who speculated up. The head of Exxon, or a high official, I think it was the head of Exxon, a few years ago said when the price of a barrel of oil was $100, which is where it is about now, he said, about $60 is what the price would be if it wasn't for the speculators, which is an amazing assertion. That's $40 right there out of $100. So the focus of Congress got to be to crack down on the mercantile exchange. The oil price should be based on supply and demand, short of a control. Of price control, which isn't occurred. But it isn't based on supply and demand when the speculators in the New York Mercantile Exchange get a hold of it. It becomes a casino.
Well, Ralph Nader, they've enslaved the American people. I mean, if this ain't slavery, I don't know what slavery is. High-tech or otherwise, we are in a slave status in this society, and folks are apparently looking at it with glee.
Well, corporations were supposed to be our servants. They've become our masters. You're right. That's why I wrote this book, so we can disenslave ourselves. But, you know, easier than a boycott is people to tell themselves, if we can cut our gasoline consumption by 10 or 15%, you know, you walk three blocks if you can to get a newspaper or whatever instead of take a car, that will send a real powerful message. When supply starts exceeding demand, because the demand is declining, you can see a reduction at the gas pump historically.
So you saw the article in the Sunday Times, I'm sure, about Apple and the 700,000 contract employees across the globe, and only 43,000 here, and as many other places, because of the ease which you can get the chain of parts that you need, and to get workers to go in there in the middle of the night to work, that corporations are going across the ocean instead of building jobs here. And that today, former Secretary of Labor Reich argued in an article that they're always going to do that. That's not going to change, because that's where they're going to make their profit, and that the government has to make investments to fuel the country. So the question is, I think this is at the heart of what's vexing America. And I think it's also really misunderstood, and it's also confusing.
Well, Bob Reich keeps saying that, and I disagree with him. There's no reason why this country cannot protect itself from imports from basically serf or slave labor by regimes that repress their workers, prevent them from making any union efforts. You go to jail in China if you try that. And the pressure is so great in these giant factories that are building the iPad and the iPhone in China. One of them is 450,000 workers,
right,
24 hours a day. The pressure is so great that there's almost 100% turnover. Even though they're paid, you know, 80 cents an hour or whatever, and the alternative would be worse, they can't take the pressure. They can't take the foreman beating up on them. And they got dorms where they got 13 people on bunks living in a room the size of a small kitchen, producing your iPad and your iPhone. Furthermore, there have been so many suicides at that plant, they have nets. They have nets outside the windows to catch people who are jumping out. So heavy is the pressure. So Steve Jobs should have paid attention to it. He's done a great job in a lot of areas. But I wrote the general counsel a few years ago, George Riley, who used to work for us, and I said, what about these plants in China? I mean, why isn't Apple conditioning? We're not going to buy from you. You're going to have to meet certain humane standards. Never got a reply. And it's time now for Apple to reply, because first of all, there's some bad publicity on Apple, and there's this great show by Mike Daisy that was on National Public Radio, Mark, where he went to this plant, and he produced a one-hour brilliant satire, fact-filled, based on his interviews. Did you happen to see it?
No, I did not.
Oh, yeah, it's spectacular. Mike Daisy.
I will check that out and tell the rest of the world about it. I've not seen it. But, you know, when you look at some of the things you were writing about here, there are things in here in your book that are not in the kinds of journals that many people read every day, like the Corporate Crime Reporter, and that whatever people think about the war in Iraq or the war in Afghanistan, your piece about KBR and what has happened to American soldiers who are contracting acute myeloid leukemia and the other stories like that. These are stories that don't get, I mean, they may be in some of the mainstream press. There, a lot of them are not. They're in kind of the smaller, more investigative news. But the larger, they don't get an airing in the larger media. And as Kevin Z says, other people are saying that we have to begin to figure out how to use social media to get these stories out, because otherwise nobody's going to hear it.
Yeah, well, even if they're in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, once, that isn't enough. It's got to be picked up by people, by social media. It's got to be picked up in editorials. That's why when 60 Minutes puts out its great reports, there oftentimes not much happens, because there's no follow-up by citizen organizations, by lawsuits, by prosecutors, by congressional hearings, which was the case more in the 60s and 70s, why we got things done. But what I want to debunk here is the myth of the powerlessness of people when it
right.
comes up against these big companies. That's what this book is all about. And I want to say to people who are listening, if you think that these big corporations are so powerful that they cannot be changed, with the most modest organization in each congressional district, that's another reason you should read this book. Because the mechanism to change these corporations is the Congress. It has enormous unused power. Investigative power, tax power, the power to bring the soldiers back home, the power to reallocate budgets from the military-industrial complex machine back to building public works and creating good jobs from Baltimore to San Diego, rebuilding the crumbling America's infrastructure. And that's what you want to do. You can't do it by just saying, oh, let's organize some people vis-a-vis GM or vis-a-vis Exxon. You go to the cockpit. You go to the power lever, which is Congress, made up of 535 men and women who put their shoes on every day like we do. And they are very sensitive once the people back home wake up and start giving them instructions in a agenda-based manner. I mean, you got to believe that, because that's the way we grow up, to be powerless. I mean, they tell us in 1,000 ways when we're 10, 15, 20. Forget it. Try to get a good job. You're not going to change anything. They're too powerful. They got the power. The few are going to decide for us. Nonsense. We haven't begun to ripple our muscles in the civic arena. We're the ones who've got the vote, and we've got the numbers, and now we've got the Internet.
I want to encourage our listeners here to really kind of read, play, and get steamed with this book. Getting Steam to Overcome Corporatism by Ralph Nader.
The whole key on Steamed is people can know about these corporate abuses, but unless they have got fire in their belly, I mean, that's what changed America. Rosa Parks and the Montgomery boycott, bus boycott, the workers, the auto workers in Flint, Michigan, the sit-down strike in the late 30s to build the United Auto Workers. Going back 200 years, a few people, you know, worked on what a lot of people know is wrong, but these few people got the ball rolling because they got fire in their belly. It's called emotional intelligence now in the psychological literature, Mark.
But you can feel America roiling. It's there.
Oh, yeah, it's there. I mean, look at 4 years ago, we had the following polls, and it's even worse now. 81% of the American people think America is going in the wrong direction. 75% think corporations have too much control over their lives. And 61% believe that the two major parties are failing them. Now, if that was the case 4 years ago, imagine what it is today.
Ralph Nader, I want to thank you so much once again for the books you write, the work you do, and for joining us on the air.
More details, folks, visit CSRL.org, CSRL.org. Let's get together.
Ralph Nader's book, Getting Steam to Overcome Corporatism. Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, program.
Take care. We'll take a brief break and come back, and we're going to check on what's going on the other side of the globe, looking at the first anniversary coming up of the Egyptian resistance for democracy, what it's saying, what's going on in Egypt, what's happening around the Arab world and the Muslim world. We're joined by Jahan Hafiz, who is currently in Cairo, where she has spent most of the past year, a freelance journalist, working with RealNews.com, and Ali Zagheb, Palestinian-born local businessman who's very involved in Middle Eastern affairs. Stay with us. We'll be right back with that.